Hello, and welcome to Awakening Into Life, an ongoing podcast series that covers the topics of non-duality, self-realization, and the embodiment of awakening. My name is Bradley, and I am a teacher of non-dual wisdom with a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. And I have devoted my life and my work to helping those who are walking the pathless path, which might include great difficulty and confusion at several stages of the journey. Now, this particular podcast episode is essentially a part four to this talk that I gave in 2015 on the promise, process, and pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to the talk, I invite you to take a look at the website at awakeningintolife.com. This part four is really sort of an effort to sort of provide some updates and clarifications on the talk that was given, because it was 6 years ago at this point. I was only a year into my own awakening experience when I gave that particular talk. It was the first public talk that I had ever given. My initial awakening or opening experience had taken place in October of 2014. And then I had gone on this process of surrender, incredibly deep surrender in so many ways for quite some period of time, which includes leaving my life behind, essentially, selling all of my possessions and becoming homeless for a period of 3 months, literally living on the streets of Seattle in deep surrender as a wandering ascetic. And I had moved to Florida in sort of the June-July timeframe of 2015, and I was spending time with some different teachers of different sorts from a variety of different contemplative wisdom traditions. And, you know, they were all sort of helping me realize and recognize that, you know, there wasn't really much left for me to see. That all the big sort of insights and realizations that occur on this path, they had already taken place, and that really the rest of this was going to be about continuing to deepen, right, into my relationship with that understanding. Often we have this misnomer that, you know, there's a plateau that we reach. And once we've hit that spiritual plateau, this thing called enlightenment, then, you know, it's all rainbows and unicorns after that. But it's just not true. There's a continuing process of evolving, maturing, growing, deepening, that happens, that just continues to move on. I refer to it as learning how to walk the infinite last mile. There's this recognition, of course, that there is this, what we might call an absolute view or absolute perspective about the fundamental nature of awareness, right? That wordless dimension of being, right? As I've said before, I am a mystery unto myself, right? Because if I'm using words to try to describe or explain the mystery to myself, then this fundamental awareness that is my true nature is aware of those explanations, and also aware that those explanations are rooted in language and have no fundamental reality to themselves. So it's sort of like a catch-22 as you try to use words to describe this even to yourself. So this absolute view that we might hold is one where there is only this awareness. we might describe it in a lot of different ways, but that's it. Like, this aware presence of being. Everything is arising within this. Everything is occurring in this. Everything is falling away in this. This is all there is. Even the rising, even the occurrence, even the falling away is still this. But that gets, you know, very paradoxical, and that's sort of trying to help people understand what's at work here. That's the whole purpose of this entire series and of everything that I do. So if that feels about as clear as mud to you, that's probably, I would say that's probably normal. So anyway, I want to take a little bit of time to talk here about what has evolved and matured and deepened in my experience since this talk was given. Again, it's not that the realization has changed. It's that the experiential relationship with what was realized has continued to evolve, to grow, to mature, to deepen. One of the things that I would say very differently today is I don't really talk so much about our purpose anymore. When I'm talking about purpose now these days, I usually am talking about it from the perspective of our purpose is to be present in this moment, right? We could say it that way. To, you know, if we're sitting here and we're saying, what is my purpose? And in that moment, you're sitting there asking, what is my purpose? Then your purpose is to ask, what is my purpose? Because that's what's arising and occurring in that moment. So I don't necessarily assert our purpose as love anymore, although I am certainly not suggesting that love isn't a huge, huge, huge part of this. My focus more these days is on helping people, like the whole focus of my work is on helping people recognize and understand the nature of mind as mind. Because until we understand this, until we've seen clearly for ourselves the nature of the mind and just how subtle the mind really is, even conversations about love, they have the potential to go sideways because we might still be connecting to our psychological image or our conditioned views about what we think love is. Love is inherent in all things being as they are. And no one really has to be more loving, so to speak. As a matter of fact, it's many of the ways that we've been conditioned to see ourselves are very unloving and are reinforced when we start to try to force upon ourselves this notion that we should be more loving or that we need to be more loving. The process of really sort of honoring the true nature of love begins with you. It begins with you loving all of who you are. All of who you are. And as you truly embrace all of who you are with love and kindness, caring and compassion, a lot of the kinds of things that you might have been trying to get rid of or things that you've been trying to do more of, they sort of begin to naturally resolve themselves. It's almost as if you try to tackle these things head on, you make them problematic. But if you give them room to breathe and you come in from behind and you sort of ninja your way into the dynamics of awareness, you offer yourself the room and the space to disentangle yourself from all of the problematic patterns of thought and behavior that may be influencing your experience of life. So that's one thing that's a little bit different. Is, like I said, I don't talk so much about purpose anymore, and I really don't talk about love without sort of caveating it and very deliberately explaining how love is inherent in all things as they are, and that sort of bridging the gap between our mental notion of love and how we actually relate with ourselves is the starting point for love. We must learn to love ourselves truly, right? Honestly, authentically, deeply. We need to really cultivate a relationship with love with ourselves if we're going to be out in the world and we're going to have these conversations about what love is in the world. Another thing here that I wanted to point out is you'll hear me in one of the sections talking about a continuum of conscious awareness. And this is something I just wanted to say. It's sort of an important model, at least in the work that I do. It's a one way of describing what sort of happens at these different stages. The continuum of conscious awareness is another roadmap, just like the metaphor of the mountain that I use quite often, just sort of creating some distinctions about the nature of this journey so that we can begin to appreciate how different teachings might apply at different stages of the journey. So we don't sort of throw away things that could be useful later, and we don't hold on to things that are no longer useful. So this model, the continuum of conscious awareness, if you're interested, you can check out my website again at awakeningintolife.com and take a look at the interview section there. And you'll see that I did an interview with Nick Higham, who runs the Non-Duality podcast. And the whole session, the whole interview was based on this continuum. I believe it's called the fluid nature of the awakening process or something like that. And we really do. We go through the different stages of this continuum: sleeping, seeking, awakening, deepening, and ceasing. So if you're interested in that, please feel free to pursue that by taking a look at the website. Another thing here is I talked briefly about the ego. The ego is such an interesting paradox, and perhaps at some point I'll do a whole session on it, because the nature of this paradox is befuddling to the mind. And the ego has gotten a bad rap, let's just say. It seems to me that in most spiritual circles, we've established this thing called an ego, and it's that part of ourselves which we blame for everything that we do wrong. And that isn't at all true, even when we're talking about the egoic manifestation of mind or egoic consciousness. It's honest to goodness, it's really just another placeholder for a bigger conversation about something that is not separate, that doesn't have these sort of qualities of distinction, something that isn't apart from. Okay? But it gets very paradoxical, it gets very twisted around, and it's worthy of having a whole dedicated session around the nature of the ego and its paradoxical qualities. How ego looks one way as we're going up the mountain, it looks a different way when we're at the top of the mountain, and then it looks yet another way as we're going back down the mountain again. Right? The ego and our relationship with that which we would call the ego shifts as we're seeking, as we're awakening, and as we're deepening. So that's another thing that I think it's worth pointing out here, and exploring later on down the road in a more complete session that will allow us to begin to explore the ego and diffuse the notions of separateness that are connected to our idea of the ego. Next, I also want to point out, you'll hear me use the word God a lot in this three-part talk that I did. And, you know, that really has to do with the community, the environment that I was in. And, you know, most of us, we have these conceptual models built up for ourselves about what God is, the nature of God. And a lot of that depends on our conditioning, whatever religious, spiritual, philosophical perspective that we've sort of aligned ourselves with is probably the most significant influencer in terms of our relationship with this idea of something called God. Just to clarify, when I'm talking about God, I'm not talking about an entity. I'm not talking about a concept. What I'm really pointing at, it really is a placeholder. It's another placeholder. I mean, when you think about it, this whole conversation about the nature of awakening, enlightenment, is about words. It's about how we've strung ourselves out on the use of words and we're hooked. And we have to give up that addiction to language in order to actually be free, to get the monkey off your back, so to speak. But this word God, it's a placeholder. And I prefer to think of it more in like some of the very early indigenous tribal peoples, rather than having a word for God. They might represent this quality of God with a symbol. One I remember being just three dots. And it's all really very much about mystery, about the mystery of being. God can be used in place of other words, or we can use other words in place of the word God, however it feels most comfortable to you. Originally, for me, I was an atheist, and so I was not at all comfortable with even using the word God. And really, as I started to go through my awakening experiences, it was more about the Tao, the nature of the Tao. But then, you know, over time, my resistance to words, even the word God, started to fall away. My relationship with now is very hard to explain. Again, I think you have to really have seen beyond the boundaries of the limited conceptual models of thought in order to really get a sense of what I'm talking about here. But, you know, as the separate self begins to fall away more and more and more, the quality or the nature of the separate self is dissolved in the wholeness of being. And that process of dissolution, it takes the form of emptiness. It empties us out. It empties all of the things of their thingness. It empties the I of its I-ness, and it empties God of its godness. And what's left is a deep, profound appreciation for this mystery of awareness, and also a recognition that within this mystery of awareness, there seems to be, play with this if you like, don't if you don't want to, there seems to be an intelligent quality to it, as though life itself has an intelligence. Again, when I say this, I do not mean it in any literal sense. I am just suggesting that, for instance, in the conversation about synchronicity, as we begin to explore the orchestration or the apparent orchestration of events that allow us to begin to glimpse into the nature of this sort of fluid perfection that's underneath everything, right? How does that occur? What is behind that process, right? What is it that's living and breathing all of life? What is that? And again, you can't capture it or contain it in a word. It's a recognition that there is this quality present in the immediacy of our lived experience. And it's all around us, and it informs and influences absolutely every aspect of itself as life. It is the harmony of motion of which I was speaking. So I don't necessarily want to spend too much more time on this. I just want to highlight that, you know, you can look at it through whatever lens you like, and you can use whatever word you like. But ultimately, this process of dissolving the separate self into the sort of essence of mystery, there are certain things that start to become apparent, and they're not things that you can really explain with words in any reasonable way. It loses its punch when we try to put it into words. The other thing that I'd like to talk about here is, I talk a lot in that presentation about perfection, right? And I just was speaking to that point here as well, talking about synchronicity. You know, when the borders and the boundaries of separateness are dissolving, there is a recognition that everything is of one singular nature. There's a seamless whole, right? I know we use terms like oneness and other words to try to describe it, but it's really not that either. It is an absence within which our presence becomes apparent. And in that, there is an underlying inherent perfection in the way of things, because everything is one thing, and that one thing has an intelligence to itself that allows itself to live and breathe as all things within this dynamic harmony of motion. We could call this life. That's what the nature of life is. But this perfection, for many people, what will happen is, and this is sort of a getting stuck at the top of the mountain kind of thing, what will happen is, we'll adopt this position or this perspective that because everything is perfect, it means that all of my thoughts and all of my behaviors are also perfect. And therefore I don't have to take any responsibility or be accountable in any way for what is emerging through my experience of being me, my experience of being in the world. And while that is true on its face, I often like to say to people, it is not a license to be an asshole. There's a balancing point within this understanding that becomes incredibly important to the process of embodying the realization, where you figure out that while you can't really get it wrong, there are wise and compassionate ways to engage in life that are more helpful than those ways of being in the world that might not be so wise and might not be so compassionate. There's a quality of simplicity that begins to emerge, and we find ourselves moved in the direction that we are moved through the experiential connection that we have with our own hearts, with our own being. And so finding that balancing point happens somewhere in between being at the top of the mountain and coming back down the mountain. But don't get caught in it. It's sort of a note, right? We're making a note here. Don't get caught in it. It's a trap, right? I talked about traps. It's a trap. It's a trap to sit here and say to yourself, there is no me, and therefore the no me has no responsibility. Okay, but I've talked before in other places about how the adoption of a no me identity is just as absurd as the adoption of a me. And that you have to let both of these go if freedom is really going to be yours. It's already yours, but for you to fully understand and recognize what that freedom is and what that freedom means requires that you let go, even of letting go, that you set enlightenment aside and cease to pursue a notional vision of what you think it is. You offer yourself the opportunity to actually have your authentic human experience at every level and in every way. And you're no longer trying to protect or defend a spiritual image of someone who is quote unquote enlightened or awakened or spiritual. It no longer matters. So just sort of a note, as I said, not to get caught on that necessarily. One more thing here. When I talk about suffering, and I'm talking about the process of facing and letting go of our suffering, I'd say this is something that has to happen at the level of mind, body, and heart. And over the years, one of the big changes for me over the years since this talk was originally given is I actually went and acquired a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling, and I've done quite a bit of training in trauma. And so I would say that it's not just awakening at the level of mind, but it's also awakening at the level of body and heart, and being able to work through the traumas that are encoded in our experience of the body. You know, these traumas and the way that they get sort of caught in the nervous system, they get trapped. We feel unsafe in our own bodies. That's really what happens. We end up feeling unsafe in our own bodies. And as we're being asked to let go of the mind and to stop being so much in thought or so identified with thought, if we feel unsafe in the body, then it's going to be very hard to breathe into the gut, to breathe into the belly. It's going to be very hard to inhabit the heart. Right? Very difficult, very challenging in so many ways if we haven't dealt with the trauma. And so, because the mind feels safe and familiar, we would rather continue to occupy that space than explore and deepen into the full range of our human experience, even when that invites tremendous suffering. It's almost like the suffering too feels safe and familiar. Isn't that interesting? Just something worth taking note of and sort of looking at through this lens of the awakening process. The last thing that I'll bring to the surface here, or bring to the forefront, is this conversation, this portion of the talk that I did that really covered traps. And I want to ask if you figured it out yet. It's all a trap in one way. I like to say it's all a trap, there are no traps, and that's a trap, right? So recognizing for ourselves that even as we're talking about this, if we believe it, you're sitting here, you're listening to this podcast right now, if you take at the surface the things that I'm saying and you say, yes, I agree with you, or no, I do not agree with you, I believe you, or I don't believe you, then you're in a trap, right? Because what we're really talking about here is the experiential realization of one's own true being. And that realization does not occur in belief. It does not occur in agreement. It only occurs when one actually looks deeply and makes contact with this ineffable truth of our being. And whenever we use words to speak with one another, to share with one another, the manner in which those words are received is a part of a perceptual engine contingent upon our conditioning. So whatever words that I am saying now, as you hear them, the engine of mind is at work with this discriminatory process based on your conditioning, where it suggests to you that the words I'm saying mean what you think they mean. And we have to allow for that and acknowledge that as sort of a limitation in this process of communication, so that we're able to explore these things together without the language that we're using, without it becoming a trap. So, there you are. Those are just some of the things that I wanted to explore a little bit more, talk through a little bit more. You know, the presentation on the promise, process, and pitfalls of obtaining spiritual enlightenment. It's a much older talk for me, 6 years ago, right? Only a year into my own awakening experience. And I just wanted to go back and sort of address some of these things just a little bit differently. Add another quality or dimension to them so that as you're stepping away from listening to this particular four-part series that's embedded in this Awakening Into Life podcast, that you walk away with a clearer understanding of what I'm really saying, what I'm really talking about. And as you go through and listen to more of these podcasts, what you'll see is that this process of a deeper understanding has continued to build up and emerge more and more and more and more over these past 6 years. And it makes the kinds of conversations that I have with people today a bit different. The structure, the tone, the emphasis is a little bit different in many, many ways. But you'll hear it in the podcast. Sometimes we'll be talking about something that, you know, came up 5 or 4 or 3 or 2 years ago. And sometimes a podcast will cover a conversation that's happening in real time today, here, now. And you'll hear it all. You'll hear it all. You'll hear all the different ways and perspectives that this can be presented. So, as with everything else I've said, I really hope that in some small way this has been helpful and useful, that you've gotten something out of it. And if not, that's wonderful too. That's wonderful as well. We never really know how we're being touched by something in our experience. Even the quality of disagreement being stirred up in our experience can actually shift something in our experience of ourselves later on down the road. So you don't have to agree either. It's all okay. It really is. It's all okay. It's all wonderful. So my thanks to you. And I believe that the next series of talks in this podcast are actually going to be about my own awakening journey. Because I do find that there is value or can be value in hearing what someone else went through as they began this process of inner exploration, had these insights, and then had to learn how to integrate them and live in a world that may not make as much sense as it did before we woke up from our idea of ourselves. So anyway, so we'll get into that. That'll be what I think the actual talk as it was given will probably be 4 parts. And then I have an additional 2-part update that I'm adding. And so that'll be 6 talks, 6 episodes as a whole, in order to sort of walk through this awakening process from an experiential point of view, or at least the tip of the iceberg. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your time. I really appreciate you being here and being a part of this conversation. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I would invite you to visit the website at awakeningintolife.com, where you can discover more about myself and my background, the kinds of services that I offer, and discover more about this sort of awakening process and what it means and how to go through. Until next time, my friends, take care and be well.